a Paramount picture. In VistaVision, motion picture high fidelity. The window of a travel agent shop, adorned with 1950s posters of France and the Côte d'Azur in summertime. Cary Grant and Grace Kelly. Alfred Hitchcock's To Catch a Thief. With Jesse Royce Landis, John Williams, Charles Vanel, Brigitte Aubard, Jean Martinelli, and Georgette Anis. Screenplay by John Michael Hayes. Based on the novel by David Hodge. Directed by Alfred Hitchcock. Traffic slowly moves by in the window's reflection. Closing in on one of the posters, a picture of a beachfront restaurant and palm trees with the strapline, "If you love life, you'll love France." A middle-aged woman in her bedroom. At night, a black cat trots up a sloping tiled roof to a window. Inside, a thief empties a jewelry box of its contents, and the black cat slinks away again. Another night, and the cat crosses another roof. This time, the black-gloved hand of a thief slides under a sleeping woman's pillow and removes a wrapped bundle. Then the cat walks away again across the roof. At the commissaire de police, outside, four suited men walk down a sunny street and get into a small black car. They drive along a coastal road and through the hills towards a solitary house. The large stone building with its red-tiled roof sits nestled on the hillside, baking in the sun, and a short distance away from a hilltop village. A matronly woman wearing a light blue apron dusts the arched balcony, then goes inside and crosses the stone floor, wiping down tables and furniture. A black cat lies on the sofa, half covering a scratched newspaper story titled "The Cat Prowls Again." It reads, "Is it true or just a rumor that John Roby, former cat burglar of Paris before the war, is once again on the prowl?" Fashionable resorts on the Riviera are being regularly looted by a skillful jewel thief. Roby, once a hero of the French Resistance Army, was said to have reformed. However, the style of this new crime wave is certainly his. Outside, a tanned man in his 40s, with slicked back dark graying hair, is tending to his roses when he notices a car approaching. He walks the length of the terrace, with endless views of the hills beyond, past potted rose plants around a pond, and up some steps to the house. He goes inside, where the housekeeper is still working. He hurries up to a bedroom and stands by the wall, watching out of the window as the black car pulls into his drive. The four suited men get out of the car, and the vehicle reverses out of the drive again. The commissaire directs two of his men around either side of the house, while he and his colleague approach the front door. The man at the window picks up a shotgun and loads two cartridges into it, then lays it on a chair. He opens his door and looks down into the main living area. The housekeeper leaves as he comes downstairs to meet the two detectives.
Le Pic, merci.
Monsieur Roby, we represent the Sûreté. We are making some inquiries in reference to a number of jewel robberies. We have reason to believe that you could provide us with information that would help us in our investigations. Would you be good enough to accompany us to our office in Nice?
Monsieur Roby looks out at a waiting detective on the balcony, smirks, and turns to Commissaire Lepic.
All right, but would you mind if I put on something more formal?
Je vous en prie.
Roby goes back up to his bedroom and closes the door behind him.
Merci, viens.
Lepic and Mercier stalk up the stone staircase. They run to the bedroom door, but can't open it. Outside, three detectives run round the house and go in through the door. But Roby's on the roof, watching them. The detectives break the bedroom door open and find the shotgun resting on an upturned chair. They run out of the house and down the drive towards their black car as Roby speeds off down the road in his sporty maroon and cream convertible. The black police car races along an old narrow road that passes the edge of a small town, a jumbled assortment of tall, thin stone houses with terracotta roofs. Once past it and back into the terraced hills, it pursues Roby's sports car along curving roads and under a viaduct. They speed along the edge of a grassy mountaintop, with open countryside spread out far below them. The road winds in S-shaped bends with sheer drops to the side of them. Then they approach another village. They drive through the mass of crammed, higgledy-piggledy houses, and the police car comes out the other side, without Roby's sports car in front of it. The police car stops and they get out, but as soon as they do so, he drives past them and they give chase again. Soon both cars are stopped by a herd of sheep crossing the road, and they discover it's not Roby driving, but the housekeeper. One of the detectives checks inside the car. Then the police reverse and drive away again. They drive back the way they came, towards the house. Roby's standing in the driveway with his hands on his hips, watching as the local bus approaches. He calmly walks out to meet it and flags it down. Roby boards the dilapidated red and white bus and they pull away, just as the police pass them on their way back to the house. Roby watches them out of the back window as they pull into his drive. Then he looks down at an old woman's birds in a cage next to him. Sitting on the other side of him is Alfred Hitchcock. The bus arrives on the French coast, and Roby gets out along with the other passengers. He goes down some steps, nonchalantly covering his face as he passes an unsuspecting policeman, to a busy terrace restaurant next to the harbor. He stands on the steps for a moment, surveying the restaurant scene with the Riviera behind him, then goes down to the terrace. A waiter, who's opening a bottle of champagne at a table, looks so terrified when he spots him, he sprays the drink everywhere.
Pardon.
Roby shakes his head, then walks across the terrace and amongst the tables decorated with white cloths and red roses until he catches the eye of the owner, a grey-haired man in a light brown suit. Roby heads inside, passing a woman on the front desk who watches with a mixture of fear and disapproval as he goes into an office, where he looks in on the kitchen through a large glass-paneled door. One of the chefs notices him and goes to tell two of his colleagues at the sink, then the rest of the kitchen staff. They all look round at Roby, who watches them impassively until someone throws an egg at the window and it smashes in front of his face. But no one owns up. Then the owner comes in.
Ah, but damn it. En plein bagarre.
Parle anglais.
Okay.
You left in a hurry, huh?
They came for me an hour ago.
The police?
Five of them.
Naturally, you are innocent.
I haven't stolen a piece of jewelry in 15 years.
Ah, honesty.
Well, it has a good feeling.
What do you think of my kitchen? Works like a machine, yes?
Botanic.
Just like our little band in the underground during the war. Cutting, slicing, just like the old days.
They think I'm responsible for these robberies, don't they?
Well, once they were all in prison with you.
I know. And now if there's any crime on the Riviera, we're the first to be suspected by the police.
But since the war, I have obliged all these men to be honest. I have beat honesty into their skulls. I did not want them to break their paroles and return to prison.
Listen, if my parole is broken, they'll throw away the key. I came here for one reason, to tell these men and you that I had nothing to do with the robberies.
Perhaps I believe you. But your comrades are very angry with you, Roby. They think you let them down.
So long, Bertani. I wouldn't put it past any of them to be doing the robberies themselves.
Simple men without education? No, Roby.
Monsieur Bertani.
Excuse me, business calls. Don't go.
Once Bertani's gone, Roby opens the door to the kitchen and looks in on the staff. One of them pours a saucer of milk and quietly, tauntingly offers it to him. The waiter from outside limps towards Roby.
Bonjour, Fuzan.
But goes straight past. A chef menacingly twists the tops off a bunch of carrots. And a large man at the sink breaks a plate, then advances on Roby, who picks up a nearby bottle and throws it to him. When he instinctively catches it, he drops the plate. Bertani comes back and closes the kitchen door.
But you know, coincidence can be terrible. These robberies all bear your mark. But you claim to be innocent.
I do more than claim, I insist. What I can't understand is how this thief could imitate me so perfectly. It has to be someone who knew every detail of my technique. Maybe somebody in the police.
Oh!
Voila! He picks perfect victims and only the right stones. Goes up walls, over the roofs, down through the skylights. Leaves no clue, and then disappears in the night.
Just like John Roby, the cat.
You don't believe me any more than the rest.
Oh, you're as nervous as a cat.
If somebody caught this imitator, we'd all be off the hook, wouldn't we?
Surely.
Well, no one believes me, but the police are chasing the wrong man. Someone's got to start chasing the right one.
One day he'll make a mistake.
But, Danny, there's only one answer, and I should have seen it sooner. I've got to catch this imitator myself.
You couldn't do more than the police?
Oh, but I could. And I'm the only one who could, because I can anticipate him, try to figure out his next move, and then get there ahead of him and catch him with his hand right in a jewel case.
If they catch you, nobody will believe what you say.
Who believes me now? The biggest problem is time. I've got to hit this copycat before he hears I'm after him. To catch him in the act, I need better information than he has, the kind it takes months to dig out.
Like who has jewels that deserve to be stolen?
Yeah. Where they live, which room they keep the stones in, what time they usually go to sleep, how much they drink, whether they have dogs, guns, servants, insurance.
Well, for old time's sakes, perhaps I can help you.
Come on, Bertani, what have you got?
You maybe remember something. 2 days ago, a man came into this restaurant. I did not like him.
Why not?
He called me to his table. He asked me about crime and criminals. Me, a respectable, honest restaurateur.
You think he may know something about the robberies?
He asks me strange questions. I refuse to answer. Then he asks me about the jewels my clients wear. And I said to myself, you have something to do with this new cat. Maybe you are the new cat.
Monsieur Bertani, le commissaire Le Pic est dehors, dans le jardin.
Il est seul?
Non, deux.
While Bertani opens the door to look out at the restaurant terrace, Roby steps back out of view. The waiter limps into the kitchen, so Bertani summons him out to talk to him.
Continue votre travail et laissez-moi faire, je vais lui parler. Ta fille a fini l'inventaire à la cave?
Non, je ne veux pas qu'elle soit
mêlée. Tu préfères coucher en tôle ce soir? Conduis Monsieur Roby près d'elle.
Foussac's daughter will take you out of here by boat.
Where?
The beach club in Cannes. Wait for a phone call there.
Attendu.
The waiter, Foussard, with his limp and a white streak in his otherwise jet-black hair, ushers Roby out the back way as Bertani straightens his tie and goes to meet Commissaire Le Pic. Then both men enter the kitchen.
Salut! Voulez-vous tous m'écouter, s'il vous plaît? Je voudrais savoir si parmi vous, il y en a un qui a vu Monsieur Roby. C'était vrai pour les bords.
Les flics viennent de s'amener. Ils recherchent Monsieur Roby.
Foussard speaks to a young blonde woman while Roby waits.
Qu'est-ce que tu attends? Tu as compris ce que je t'ai dit?
Ok, Mr. Cat, let's go.
Danielle, do me a favor, don't call me a cat.
I only do one favor a day.
Écoute un peu, bébé.
Will you do as your father here asks?
Did I brush your fur the wrong way?
He follows Danielle out.
C'est très bien. Vous aurez tous de mes nouvelles.
On the terrace, a detective notices a boat pulling away with two people in it and shows Le Pic. They hurry up the steps. The boat leaves the harbor and cruises along the coast. Danielle and Roby stand at the wheel, getting sprayed by the water.
Oh. Hey, you're getting us wet!
It must be true what they say. Cats don't like water.
Thank you not to mention that word again.
Oh, a man should never regret his past.
I only regret one thing.
That you never asked me to marry you?
No, that I ever took the time to teach you English.
You only taught me the nouns. I learned the adjectives myself.
The word cat is a noun.
Not the way you use it. For you it means excitement, danger, affluence. What do you think of that word, affluence? It means wealth.
What's on your mind?
Nothing. I was just thinking about you. Imagining you in your expensive villa, enjoying life, while we work like idiots for a loaf of bread.
I work for a living too, raising grapes and flowers.
And rubies, and diamonds, and pearls.
School's open again. Professor Roby will now conduct a class in bad manners or how to get spanked in a hurry.
You can't touch me. I've graduated. Mm. You going to South America?
No, just the beach club at Cannes.
I've always dreamed of going to South America.
Oh.
People say it's a virgin country. I can cook, sew, keep my mouth shut, and peddle all stolen jewels on the black market.
Now, Danielle, you don't think I'm responsible for all those recent robberies?
I think so, yes.
Yes. Together with your father and the rest of my old resistance pals.
But there's one great difference. They are furious with you. I am not.
Danielle, listen carefully. I stole once a long time ago. I went to jail.
I know. The Germans bombed the prison and you all escaped. Joined the underground and became heroes.
I joined because I wanted to make up for some of the things I'd done. I've never stolen since.
I don't know what you wanted. I know what you got. Pardons that are not worth anything.
They weren't pardons, they were paroles. And we fought for 6 years to earn them. Those of us who were still around for the graduation.
Those paroles don't have much value today.
Well, at least they haven't been withdrawn from circulation.
No South America?
Well, just the beach club at Cannes, please.
Well, in that case, we should hurry. That airplane up there, it probably belongs to the police.
Stupid, the contact.
Oh.
Roby ducks into the cabin just as the plane passes low overhead.
What's he doing now?
He's coming back over us.
Good. Well, when he comes by again, wave to him.
Suppose he's not my type.
Oh, wave to him anyway. Act as if you're a pretty girl just out for a ride.
Well?
She hitches her skirt above her knee and waves to the plane.
Not that pretty. We want to get rid of him. How much further to the beach club?
Well, about 15 minutes.
Well, when you get there, pull close inshore and mingle around with the other boats.
And then?
Well, then I'm getting out. I'll leave my clothes with you.
And I thought you hoped to be inconspicuous.
Well, nobody will ever recognize me in these.
Roby's floating on his back in the sea, wearing a pair of red tartan shorts and watching the plane as it flies overhead in the blue, cloudy sky. Once it's gone by, he stands up and wades in towards shore, past some people swimming, and up onto the narrow, crowded beach. He walks amongst the deck chairs and drops nonchalantly down on the sand, next to an attractive young woman in a yellow bikini who's putting on suntan lotion and watching him with interest. A man in shorts stands in front of Roby, who looks up at him.
Monsieur, au téléphone.
Still watched by the tanned young woman, Roby gets up and follows the man over to some huts, where he's handed a telephone receiver with Bertani on the other end.
Hello?
The man I speak with you about, the man who asked me the questions about the jewels, he will wait for you at the entrance of the flower market in Nice. He will find you. I told him you would be tossing a coin in the air.
The man who collected Roby does chin-ups nearby. At the flower market, people walk amongst the stalls and barrows that have been crammed with a rich collection of colorful flowers. Roby stands by the entrance, back in his normal clothes of dark striped sweater, gray slacks, and red necktie, nonchalantly flicking a coin, while Mercier and another detective watch from a car and talk on the telephone. A man in a suit, bow tie, and bowler hat with a walking stick also watches him.
Tails?
Roby checks the call, nods, and walks over to him.
H.H. Houston, Lloyd's of London.
Am I to understand you're the man who knows everyone who owns the best jewelry in this vicinity?
We insure most of the important pieces.
Insurance? That's gambling, isn't it?
Well, shall we say betting?
Yes, let's just say betting, because I have a long shot for you. A little help in return for some of your losses.
So Mr. Bertani told me.
Are you interested?
Well, the proposition sounds intriguing, albeit a little unorthodox.
What does that mean, yes or no?
My dear Mr. Roby.
Smith?
I beg your pardon. Ever been married?
No, but what has that to do with yes or no?
It might help you to understand my problem. I have two wives, Felicity, God bless her, and the London office. I must return worthy of both of them.
I see. And you don't think they'd approve of your giving me a list of your richest clients?
Officially, you come under the category of extremely bad risk.
He glances at the men in the car.
I'll see you later, Houston. It's always a pleasure to meet an insurance agent who enjoys paying off such expensive claims.
Houston follows him.
However, unofficially, there's hope for you.
I'm sure there would be.
We're both taking a big chance, you know.
Really? What happens to you if I'm caught?
I might be embarrassed, even censured officially.
They could put me away for good.
You made a bad choice of professions.
Well, then let's come to an understanding. I'm doing you a favor. I take all the risks, you get all the jewelry back.
Mr. Smith, it strikes me that only an honest man would be so foolish.
Thank you.
They notice the men from the car are following.
How much of a list do you need?
Only the top half dozen names.
Anything else?
Oh, the addresses, habits, whatever you've got. Descriptions of the stones and settings.
They run.
Suppose it falls into the wrong hands.
Perhaps it already has, unless you've been pulling the thefts yourself.
I say, that's not a bad idea.
Where are you staying?
Carlton, cash.
Okay. Houston stops while Roby runs on and bumps into someone carrying a basket of flowers, which they spill over him. He hides under the flowers, but the detectives have already seen him. When they try to dig him out, the whole stand collapses on all three of them.
No, no, no!
The detectives hold his arms while the stall holder, an elderly woman, beats him with a bunch of flowers and chides him. Other people rush over to help her, grabbing the two men who have Roby. He takes the opportunity to run, but the woman keeps hold of his sleeve and traps him. Two officers approach, and Roby surrenders. Hewson watches anxiously as the officers and the detectives from the car escort Roby away, the old woman still yelling at him. Back at the villa, Roby and Hewson sit on the terrace wall and raise a toast to each other. They drink, and Roby offers to fill Hewson's wine glass again.
No, my dear fellow, not in the middle of the day.
Le déjeuner est servi.
Yes, easy, man. Bring it to the table with you.
Roby tops him up again from the bottle.
Come on.
They go to a small lunch table on the balcony, and Hewson notices the black cat asleep on a chair.
Under the present circumstances, do you think it pays to advertise?
He hasn't left the villa in years. Well, how do you like the place?
Immensely. It's a kind of travel folder heaven where a man dreams he'll go when he retires.
Now, about that list of your clients who have jewelry worth stealing.
Why don't we enjoy our lunch first? There's plenty of time.
Mr. Hewson, I don't want to seem impatient, but in 10 days, I have to come up with something pretty convincing for the examining magistrate. Now, it's a very nice custom they have here in France. Provisional liberty based upon insufficient evidence. But alas, that may not last long for me.
Batani said you were something of a celebrity in the underground army.
I was in the resistance.
Did you kill many people?
72. I know what would have pleased you, though, Hewson. Not one of them was insured.
You're a man of obvious good taste in everything. How did you... why did you...
You mean, why did I take up stealing?
Yes.
Oh, to live better, to own things I couldn't afford, to acquire this good taste which you now enjoy, and which I should be very reluctant to give up.
Well, you mean you were frankly dishonest?
I tried to be.
You know, I thought you'd have some defense, some tale of hardship. Your mother ran off when you were young, your father beat you or something.
No. I was a member of an American trapeze act in a circus that traveled in Europe. It folded and I was stranded, so I put my agility to a more rewarding purpose.
You have no other defense?
Not for what it's worth. I only stole from people who wouldn't go hungry. Your pleasure. This is the quiche Lorraine. I think you'll enjoy this.
Quiche Lorraine? Yes, I've heard of it. I never had it, though. It looks delicious.
Yes.
Mmm. Oh, it's wonderful. The pastry is as light as air.
Ah, well, Germaine has very sensitive hands, an exceedingly light touch.
Yes, I can tell.
She strangled a German general once. Without a sound.
Hewson looks round, alarmed.
Extraordinary woman. I take it you were a sort of modern Robin Hood. Huh? I mean, you gave away most of the proceeds of your crime.
Mm-hmm. Kept everything myself. Well, let's face it, I was an out-and-out thief, like you.
Oh, I said steady, huh?
Wait a minute. Did you ever take an ashtray from a hotel or a towel?
Souvenirs, they expect there.
You're given an expense allowance to pay for all the meals you eat on the job, right? But this meal is free. Now, are you going to deduct the price of a lunch from your expense account? Well, of course you're not. It would be stupid. Do you agree?
Yes.
You're a thief. Well, only an amateur thief, of course, but it'll help you to sympathize with us professionals.
I don't think I understand fully.
Well, now, let's look at it this way. You're sorry you took the ashtray or the towel from the hotel, aren't you?
Well, right now, yes.
And someday you're going to be sorry that you didn't deduct this lunch from your expense account.
My dear, but I can't possibly deduct every little item from my expense account. I frankly couldn't spare the time.
Well, someday you'll wish you had. Every time an ashtray is missing from a hotel, they don't come looking for you. But let a diamond bracelet disappear in France and they shout, John Roby, the cat. You don't have to spend every day of your life proving your honesty, but I do. Well, let's get down to business, to the list.
Hewson removes it from his jacket pocket, but puts it back.
Is something bothering you?
I told the police what you were going to do.
I didn't expect them to like my arrangements.
You were wrong. They thought it a splendid idea, because they hope you'll make a mistake and provide them with the evidence they need against you.
Ah, yes. It had to be something like that.
He takes the list out again.
Suppose the whole thing goes wrong.
Come on, Houston, you're wasting time.
He hands it to Roby, who opens it up and reads the names of people and the jewelry they own, amounting to hundreds of thousands of dollars, while Houston watches anxiously.
Quite a thorough job. Have some wine, Houston.
Yes, I will.
Oh, I wish I'd known someone in the insurance racket when I first started in the burglary business. Well, let me see. My first bait will be this Mrs. Stevens, the American woman with the diamonds and the daughter. Do you know them?
I'm having dinner with them tomorrow. I could possibly arrange a meeting.
Houston, in this business, you can't do things the honest way. Remember that.
Houston looks away nervously, and the black cat jumps off its chair.
No, what I mean, Mrs. Stevens, wouldn't it perhaps be better if you left some of that jewelry in the hotel safe?
Stop acting like an insurance agent. I didn't buy these things for my old age. I bought them to wear. Put your money away, Houston. You can cheat a little on your expense account.
Houston glances across the restaurant and spots Roby sitting alone.
Service compris. Service compris.
That's France.
Isn't everyone from the vegetable scrubber to the manager gets a tip whether he's earned it or not. It's the law.
Mother, everywhere you go, you complain about tipping.
And I shall continue to complain. I've just paid for the privilege. Come on, let's go over to the casino. I want to hit the tables while they're hot. Perhaps I should just mail them the money. Oh, no, don't bother, Pierre. I can't afford it.
They watch Roby leave.
Handsome. I wouldn't mind buying that for you.
Oh, Mother.
Come along.
Maybe Mr. Houston doesn't care for gambling.
Everyone likes to gamble, one way or another, even you.
I have an intense dislike for it.
Francie, dear, when the stakes are right, you gamble.
Is it imitation? Really? You mean costume jewelry? Well, what do you know? The things they make these days. Why, you can hardly tell it from the real thing. Well, it's better than anything we have back in Portland, Oregon.
Almost everything is.
Thank you.
Roby follows them out. In the casino.
Never stop here. Back on my game. Why did you let me get so close to this whirling pickpocket anyway?
Roby's there.
Wouldn't you know?
Mrs. Stevens places some more bets on the roulette table and notices him when she looks across the table. Roby's standing beside a woman in a chair wearing a pearl necklace. He leans forward to peer down her cleavage, then casually drops a rectangular betting chip down it.
Mesdames et messieurs, faites vos jeux.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, madam.
Ne vous excusez pas, monsieur. Ce n'est pas bien grave.
Watching, Mrs. Stevens grins at Houston.
Yes, but madam, that... Well, that was a 10,000 franc plaque.
Madame, ce monsieur dit qu'il s'agit d'une plaque de 10 000.
The woman seems embarrassed and barely responds.
Maybe she doesn't... Well, of course, madam, if you'd rather not take my word, it's all right.
She gives Roby some chips.
No, thank you. I'll trust you too. I won't count it.
Mrs. Stevens laughs, and Roby looks across at her, also laughing.
If Jeremiah were only here, would he think all this flying around from Palm Springs to San Moritz, the Riviera, he'd think it was all foolishness. He used to say I wouldn't be one of those silly society gadabouts that promised me I could live forever. Well, he got his wish. Mr. Burns, where'd you say you were from?
Oregon.
Jeremiah would have liked you. A man with both feet on the ground, that's what he was. Unfortunately for him, he never realized how valuable the ground was he had his feet on. We had a ranch, you see. Oh,
Mother,
it wasn't
please,
a place. Oh, Mr. Burns would be very interested. We had a ranch. It wasn't a very big one. No plumbing. Little thing out back. Poor Jeremiah. He'll never know how close he came to 20 million barrels of oil.
Roby laughs.
Bourbon's the only drink. You can take all that champagne stuff and pour it down the English Channel. Well, why wait 80 years before you can drink the stuff? Great vineyards, huge barrels, aging forever. Poor little old monks running around testing it, just so some woman in Tulsa, Oklahoma can say it tickles her nose.
Mother, I think we ought to go to bed.
Nobody ever calls me Jessie anymore.
To Roby.
Mr. Burns, would you call me Jessie?
I'd be happy to.
Good. Mr. Houston, would you call me Jessie?
If you like.
I'd like. Mr. Burns, you said lumber?
That's right.
How come you haven't made a pass at my daughter? And don't say, oh, mother, to me. Mr. Burns, I asked you a question.
Very pretty. Quietly attractive.
Yeah, but too nice. Sorry I ever sent her that finishing school. I think they finished her there.
Come on, Mother.
And so to bed, where I can cuddle up to my jewelry. You know, Mr. Houston, as rare and wonderful as they are, I think I'd rather have 100,000 Jeremiahs.
Well, I think I'll toddle along to my cot.
I'll be delighted to escort you to your suite.
That's very thoughtful of you, Mr. Burns. Come on, Jesse.
Mr. Burns, do you make much money at lumber?
Well, right now, building is booming.
Would you mind if I had you investigated a little?
Not at all. With what object?
If I were Francie's age, you'd sound too good to be true.
They all make their way out. In the hotel corridor, Jessie searches for her key, then goes to her door. But Roby takes it from her.
Thank you, Mr. Burns. You know, there's very little lumber around here. Just why did you come to the Riviera anyway?
To meet someone as charming as you.
Boy, now I am going to have you investigated.
Aren't you going in?
I'm down the other end.
He closes Jessie's bedroom door and follows the beautiful and elegant blonde-haired Frances to hers, her blue dress flowing out around her. She steps inside and turns to face him, then puts an arm around his shoulders and kisses him on the lips before closing the door. Roby smiles to himself and walks off back down the corridor. Dabbing at his mouth with a handkerchief, he pauses outside Jessie's room, then seems to change his mind and carries on around the corner. He stops and looks back again, then goes to the large French doors at the end of the short corridor and opens them onto a balcony. He looks up at the side of the building and along the ledge towards Jessie's room, then notices something down below. Someone walking along the pavement and stopping to look up at him. Roby quickly steps back into the shadows.
How much did he get away with last night?
The gems were insured for $35,000 in dollars.
Somebody wins, somebody loses.
Houston, I sympathize with you.
Pretty rough having to send bad news like that into your home office.
I insured Madame LaRue personally.
Yeah. Well, at least you know that the burglar, what do they call him? The
cat.
Oh, yes. Well, at least you know he's still around and getting closer all the time. That's something, isn't it?
Mrs. Stevens, would you kindly keep your jewelry in the hotel safe?
And what do I do when I go out? Wear the safe around my neck?
Well, no, not literally. It's just that
your insurance company goes into shock every time something's stolen. If you haven't any guts, well, you shouldn't have taken my bet. Well, that's what it was, a bet. No. You want a Welsh?
If your jewels are stolen, you'll be paid, of course, but we couldn't replace the sentiment and affection you have for those particular pieces.
Mr. Houston, I have no more affection for that jewelry than I have for a train ticket that gets me somewhere. They're pretty and they attract attention. Most of all, they make it possible for my daughter to go to the right places and not be ashamed of me. That is too ashamed of me.
Good morning, Mr. Houston.
Good morning, Mr. Houston.
Mr. Burns.
You sent for me?
Yes, I thought we might go for a swim. Or if you're not athletic, sunbathing.
I think I can manage to stay afloat, thank you.
Mr. Houston's been telling us about a robbery last night after we went to bed.
Oh, who?
Madame LaRue, wife of a high government official. $35,000.
Oh, too bad. You should find a more happy business.
The famous jewel thief. The cat's loose again, they say.
Well, Mother, You're next.
I'm insured.
Well, I'll get my bathing trunks. Meet you in the lobby.
I'll just slip into something and be down in a few minutes.
Goodbye, Mr. Stevens. Good hunting you.
Just a minute, Mr. Burns. Weren't we going to what? Well, last night we discussed going up.
Up
the funicular railway.
I can't even spell funicular.
What are you doing this afternoon?
Oh, I went to a real estate agent. He gave me a list of furnished villas for rent.
Oh, do you plan that long a vacation?
I might even retire here. It says that some of the villas aren't in very good repair. Quite a few of the roofs need careful examination. Goodbye, Houston. Don't let the robbery spoil your day. It's only money and not even yours at that.
Houston awkwardly faces the two ladies. Roby's waiting in the lobby with a towel in his hand when Francis walks in wearing a flared white skirt and sleeveless black top with a black and white hat.
Should I ask the social director to introduce us?
No. I was just wondering which was the best way out of here.
Well, the Mediterranean used to be this way.
Well, I'm a gambler. Let's try that.
As they head for the door, Roby keeps staring at her beauty and outfit, as do the people who walk past them. Roby goes over to the front desk to drop his key off.
There's a message for you.
The clerk hands him an envelope.
Thank you.
Roby opens it and reads the simple handwritten note. You've already used up 8 of your 9 lives. Don't gamble your last one. A sandy beach lined with rows of green and white umbrellas, wooden deck chairs laid out beneath them. Danielle stands at the back by a water ski shack, wearing a white bathing suit and waving to get Roby's attention as he sits in the front row of deck chairs talking to Francis. Once he's noticed her, she smiles and walks down to the sea. She looks back over at Roby, who stands up and gestures for Francis to go swimming with him. Then Danielle runs into the water and swims towards a floating platform marked with the name Hotel Carlton. Roby gives up, persuading Francis to swim, as Danielle reaches the platform and uses a ladder to climb up onto it. She lies down and waits as Roby swims up.
You performed a very beautiful robbery last night.
Strictly routine.
You're marvelous. Last night you steal a small fortune and today you lie on the beach with an American beauty.
That's why one needs a small fortune.
Is this your next victim?
Well, let's just say she's a useful friend.
You know, your old friends of the resistance who work at the restaurant, they called the police all sorts of terrible names when they had to let you go yesterday.
Would it be bad manners to ask who tipped off the police at the flower market?
Oh, they never say anything to the flicks. You know that.
Somebody did.
But still, they would be very happy if you were caught during your next job.
Well, it's nice to know I have friends.
Perhaps it would be better if you were caught.
Any particular reason?
I heard some talk in the kitchen. They say, what a pity if they must kill the cat. They will do all they can to avoid the prison.
Oh, now, isn't that amazing? The police want me in jail. My old friends want me dead. The cat wants me out of town.
What do you mean the cat wants you out of town?
He sent me a message this morning. It seems the sky is about to fall in on me.
Then don't you think it's foolish to remain here without knowing what will happen to you? But if you were in South America with me, you would know exactly what will happen.
You make it sound dangerous either way.
It would be so much nicer to be killed by love, no?
Pardon me while I get the water out of my ear.
John, you know what sort of men they are at Bethany. Another robbery and they will do something to you.
Yes. Well, I better get back.
But what has she got more than me, except money? And you are getting plenty of that.
Danielle, you are just a girl. She is a woman.
Why do you want to buy an old car if you can get a new one cheaper? It will run better and last longer.
It looks as if my old car just drove off.
No, it hasn't. It's just turned amphibious.
I thought I'd come out and see what the big attraction was.
Yes.
And possibly even rate an introduction.
Oh, you didn't tell me your name.
Danielle Foussard.
Miss Foussard, Miss Stephen.
How do you do, Miss Foussard? Mr. Burns has told me so little about you.
Well, we only met a couple of minutes ago.
That's right, only a few minutes ago.
Only a few minutes ago. And you talked like old friends. Ah, well, that's warm, friendly France for you.
Well, I was asking about renting some water skis. Would you like me to teach you how to water ski?
Thank you, but I was women's champion at Sarasota, Florida last season.
It was just an idea.
Are you sure you were talking about water skis? From where I sat, it looked as though you were conjugating some irregular verbs.
Say something nice to her, Danielle.
She looks a lot older up close.
To a mere child, anything over 20 might seem old.
A child? Shall we stand in shallower water and discuss that?
Enjoying yourself, Mr. Burns?
Oh, it's very nice out here, you know, the sun and all.
Well, it's too much for me. I'll see you at the hotel.
Oh, come on.
But, Mr. Burns, you didn't finish telling me why French women are more seductive than American women.
No, what I'd like to tell you, darling. Wait a minute, what?
Danielle grabs his leg, then swims away, and Roby heads back to shore. Roby comes out of a changing cubicle, dressed again, and is putting on his jacket when he frowns and takes something out of the inside pocket. It's the list of names and jewelry collections that Hewson gave him, only it has a wet thumbprint over the fold. Roby looks around suspiciously and notices the man who took him to the phone when he first arrived on the beach doing pull-ups on a bar again. He goes over to him.
Here.
Yes, sir.
Roby gives him the key to the changing hut and leaves. A detective who was watching him from the street turns away. Roby crosses the road towards the hotel. He stops when he sees Francis waiting on the steps in a pink dress. As he goes to her, the detective follows, but stops at a safe distance.
Do you have time for me now?
I'm sorry I was so long out there at the float.
From what I saw of that girl, I thought she'd be a lot longer.
Yeah. Well, what about cocktails? 6 o'clock suit you?
Well, we can talk about that on the way.
To where?
To rent you a villa.
Miss Stevens, picking out a villa is, well, you know, it's a personal thing.
I have my car and a basket lunch with chicken and beer.
No, it's too much to expect of you. It'll be a tiring, dusty trip over mountain
road. Well, you're bound to get lost. A perfect stranger who doesn't know a word of the language.
Well, I was going to hire an English-speaking chauffeur.
You have one. I'll give you a wholesale rate and no tipping.
I must say your terms are generous.
He sees the detective watching them.
Too generous to refuse.
My terms usually are.
Where's your car?
It's right there.
Well, I guess I can't seem to get out of this gracefully, so let's go.
They walk over to an open-topped sports car. Roby opens the driver's door for Francis and waits while she gets in, then goes over to the passenger side. Two detectives watch from their black car nearby and follow them as they pull away along the seafront. Francis drives along a snaking coast road that curves around the bottom of a hillside and up another hill, the deep blue Mediterranean Sea behind them. The two detectives follow in their little black car.
I've been waiting all day for you to mention that kiss I gave you last night.
You know, back home in Oregon, we call you a headstrong girl.
Where in Oregon? The Rogue River?
Where were you born?
In a taxi, halfway between home and the hospital. I've lived in 27 different towns and cities.
Why, somebody chasing you?
Boys.
Well, you can stop running now.
When I was 10, my father died, and they discovered oil on our land, and that's when I really started to travel.
You mean the boys' fathers were chasing you?
Yes. I had the funny feeling that all they wanted was to get their hands on my money.
Oh, I'm impressed. Well, on second thought, back home in Oregon, we'd have called you a rich, headstrong girl. That would have made it all right.
Money handles most people.
Do you honestly believe that?
I've proved it.
You're a singular girl.
Is that good or bad?
Oh, it's good. It's quite good. You know what you want. You go out after it, and nothing stops you from getting it.
You make it sound corny.
Oh, no, you're a jackpot of admirable character traits.
I already knew that.
Yes, I will say you do things with dispatch, no wasted preliminaries. Not only did I enjoy that kiss last night, I was awed by the efficiency behind it.
Well, I'm a great believer in getting down to essentials.
Inviting me for breakfast, planning a swim, and now this drive. Miss Stevens, I must say you are a girl in a million.
That's a routine compliment, but I'll accept it.
May I ask you a personal question?
I've been hoping you would.
What do you expect to get out of being so nice to me?
Probably a lot more than you're willing to offer.
I know. You're here in Europe to buy a husband.
The man I want doesn't have a price.
Well, that eliminates me.
They turn into the arched entrance of a drive. Behind them, the detectives pull up in the shade of some trees just outside the gate. They both get out and run to the gate to watch as Roby and Francis approach a large villa.
You're absolutely right. Give me a woman who knows her own mind.
No one gives you a woman like that. You have to capture her.
Any particular method?
Yes, but it's no good unless you discover it yourself. Are you sure this is the right address?
Well, it is a little large, but it's on the real estate agent's list.
Let me see.
Let's look at the gardens first. No need to bother the people. Why don't you own a place like this?
Palaces are for royalty. We're just common people with a bank account.
That sounds more like your mother than you.
There's not much difference between us. A few years and some grammar.
And jewelry? You never wear any.
I don't like cold things touching my skin.
Why don't you invent some hot diamonds?
I'd rather spend my money on more tangible excitement.
Tell me, what do you get a thrill out of most?
I'm still looking for that one.
A look passes between them.
I thought we were going to look at the gardens.
Roby's been examining the upper floors of the house.
I was interested in the architecture. Mediterranean, turn of the century, isn't it?
The gardens look over the sea.
You never mention your wife.
Never found the time to get married.
You don't seem to be pushed for time now. Or did you just come over to add interesting items to your diary, like the name and description of that French girl you swam out to meet?
You are husband hunting, after all.
That wasn't jealousy you heard working, merely disappointment in your limited imagination. Teenage French girls yet. Oh, I'll bet you snowed her under. The big, handsome lumberman from America. I'll bet you told her all your trees were sequoias.
You know, that certainly sounds like jealousy to me. Don't be ashamed of it. Let it out.
You're somewhat egotistical.
Fighting fire with fire. Miss Stevens?
Yes, Mr. Burns?
You know what I think?
About what?
You.
I don't really care. Tell me.
You're an insecure, pampered woman accustomed to attracting men. But you're not quite sure whether they're attracted to you or to your money. You may never know.
Anything else?
What you need is something I have neither the time nor the inclination to give you.
Oh? And just what is that?
2 weeks with a good man at Niagara Falls.
The two detectives are playing keepy-uppy by the car when Roby and Francis drive out of the gates. They quickly get into their car and chase after them. The two cars drive over an old, high viaduct between two hillsides, the sea and the bay below them. They pass a rocky peak with a church and a house at the top, then drive through a village.
I'm hungry. What about opening that picnic basket?
Not till we get to the picnic grounds.
Which you've already picked out.
Which I've already picked out.
Is it far?
Oh, a few miles.
Lonely and secluded?
Naturally.
Roby glances in the wing mirror and sees the car following behind them.
then why are we dawdling like this?
That's exactly what was running through my mind.
Smiling, Francis speeds up on the narrow road and veers round a parked car, then a bend. Roby looks behind him, but the police car is still with them. Then they approach another bend as a bus comes round it towards them. Francis swerves to fit through a narrow gap between it and the wall. Then it races towards the police car. Francis speeds around a hairpin bend. She smiles, holding the wheel casually in her gloved hands, while Roby clutches nervously at his knees. He frowns at her as they race around the winding road. Then he looks over the side at the sheer drop beside them, just a few feet away, and rubs his sweating palms. He turns to her, annoyed now, but the police car is still behind them. They drive through another village. Up ahead, a woman crosses the road in front of them, and Frances slams on her brakes. She stops just in time, and the old woman continues across the road. Frances composes herself and drives on as the woman steps back into the road behind them to pick something up, and the detectives almost hit her with their car. Out of the village, they speed along a country road, the wind blowing back Frances's blonde hair and the pink scarf around her neck. They follow the bends one way, then another, the detectives still close behind them. Then, on a short straight, Frances has to slow down to get past a chicken in the middle of the road. Behind them, the police aren't so lucky and crash into the roadside wall, getting their car stuck on it.
No, a boulet! We are boulet! Boulet, boulet!
Roby grimaces at the speed.
Slow down!
And let them catch us?
Let who catch us?
The police in the black car, the ones who are following you.
I don't know what you're talking about. Police following me?
Yes, police following you, John Roby, the cat.
They pull off the road on the entrance to a hairpin bend and park in a small clearing between some trees, overlooking the town and the coast below them.
Oh, lovely day. Have you ever seen any place in the world more beautiful? Just look at the colors of the sea down there in the sky and those little pink and green buildings on the hill. Think of all those roofs you could climb over.
Who did you call me?
Roby. John Roby, one of the world's cleverest jewel thieves known as the Cat. I read all about you in the Paris paper.
You may have read about somebody called the Cat, but...
I thought you said you were hungry.
I am.
Well, the picnic basket's in the trunk.
She gives Roby the key, and he gets out of the car, watching her distrustfully as he closes the door and goes to the boot.
I hope you tried to bluff me, Mr. Roby, and then I can have the fun of telling you how clever I was.
Since I'm not Mr. Roby, but Mr. Burns, there would be hardly any point in trying to bluff you. Nevertheless, tell me how clever you were.
Well, the first thing I noticed about you was...
Don't sound so pleased with yourself.
I've never caught a jewel thief before. It's stimulating. It's like... Well, it's like...
Like sitting in a hot tub?
Yeah, let me serve. The first time I saw you was on the beach at Cannes. Mm. You swam ashore from a motorboat driven by that little French girl.
You got an opener? Mm.
You want a leg or a breast?
You make the choice.
It was just 2 days before you showed up at the hotel as Mr. Conrad Burns.
Uh-huh.
Just over from America. Did you swim?
Well, naturally.
Oh, now don't be disappointing and sound like Mr. Burns.
I can only be myself, Miss Stevens.
Then be yourself, John.
I prefer Conrad.
No, you can't be serious. And I think it's about time you called me Francie. I have to look out for Mother. They've tried to steal her jewelry before. So when I read about the, you in the paper, just a small item, but I picked it up.
I was sure Mother would catch your eye.
Mm-hmm. Well, she did, because I liked her. And so far, Miss Stephen.
Fancy.
So far, you haven't said anything that sounds even remotely clever.
Well, stick around. The next thing I noticed about you was something remarkable.
Yeah?
All evening long, you only looked at my mother, never at me.
I kissed you, didn't I?
I kissed you.
I certainly wasn't looking at your mother then.
You were thinking about her. Otherwise, you never would have let me say goodnight so easily.
Well, I'm a gentleman.
A rough lumberman from the big northwest.
I must remember to yell timber occasionally.
Now, here comes some of the clever part. You're just not convincing, John. You're like an American character in an English movie.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't talk the way an American tourist ought to talk.
Well, don't you know that all the guidebooks say don't behave like a tourist?
Well, it's just that you never mention business or baseball or television or wage freezes or Senate probes.
Yeah, all the things I left America to forget.
You're just not American enough to carry it off. Tell me, how long has it been?
How long has what been?
Since you were in America last.
Well, I don't know, about 4 or 5 days.
And in Oregon?
2 or 3 days before that.
Name me 3 deciduous trees indigenous to the Northwest.
Now, listen. You're a very nice girl, but you got too much imagination. You go around talking like that about me, and I'll wind up in a French jail for something I didn't do.
You're going to rob Mother first or somebody else?
Well, under the circumstances, somebody else.
Mm. That's nice. Mother likes you.
Well?
I think Lady Kenton should be our next job.
Now, listen.
Isn't she on your list? She ought to be. Kenton jewels are famous. I know every inch of a villa.
I can already hear your next line.
The cat has a new kitten. When do we start?
Don't talk like that.
You're leaving fingerprints on my arm.
I am not John Roby, the cat.
Why are the police following you? Show me that real estate list. That villa we went to isn't for rent, and you know it. Sanford's have owned it for years, and I'm going to a party there in a week. You have a very strong grip. The kind a burglar needs.
While Roby holds her arm, Francie lies down on the seat, and they kiss.
That's why you came up here, isn't it?
We'll have cocktails at 8 and dinner at 8:30, all in my suite. We'll talk about it there.
I can't come. I'm going to the casino and watch a firework display.
You'll get a better view from my place.
Already got another date.
Everywhere you go, I'll have you paged as John Roby the Cat. 8 o'clock, and be on time.
I haven't got a decent watch.
Steal one.
I could not speak with you today, Monsieur Roby. I did not know your new name.
I figured you had a good reason. What were you doing at the Sanford Villa anyway?
I supply food and drinks for the Grand Gala. I was inspecting the kitchen. I do not ask you what you were doing there, huh? You prepare also, no? There will be many women, rich jewels.
Just the bait I need.
Something the cat can't resist, huh?
I suppose all your boys will be there.
Naturally.
That's nice. You know, they threatened to put me away.
Oh, Roby, they'd be much too busy to do anything like that.
Well, you keep them busy.
Goodbye, Roby. Oh, who was the pretty American girl? You bring her to my restaurant for dinner, yes?
Not tonight. She made some small plans for the two of us.
Well, soon. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Bonsoir, madame.
Bonsoir.
Bonsoir, monsieur.
Good night.
If you really want to see fireworks, it's better with the lights out. I have a feeling that tonight you're going to see one of the Riviera's most fascinating sights. I was talking about the firework.
I never doubted it.
Where you looked at my necklace, I didn't know. I've been dying to say something about it all evening. Go ahead.
Why, have I been staring at it?
No, you've been trying to avoid it.
May I have a brandy?
Please.
Would you care for one?
No, thank you. Some nights a person doesn't need to drink. Doesn't it make you nervous to be in the same room with thousands of dollars worth of diamonds and unable to touch them?
No.
Like an alcoholic outside of a bar on election day.
Wouldn't know the feeling.
All right. You've studied the layout, drawn your plans, worked out your timetable, put on your dark clothes with your crepe sole shoes and your rope. Maybe your face blackened. And you're over the roofs in the darkness, down the sidewall, to the right apartment, and the windows locked. All that elation turned into frustration. What would you do
I'd go home, get a good night's sleep.
Oh, what would you do? The thrill is right there in front of you, but you can't quite get it. And the gems glistening on the other side of the window. And someone asleep, breathing heavily.
I'd go home, get a good night's sleep.
Wouldn't you use a glass cutter, a brick, your fist, anything to get what you wanted? Knowing it was just there waiting for you. Drinking dulls your senses.
And if I'm lucky, some of my hearing.
Blue-white, with just hair-like touches of platinum.
You know, I have about the same interest in jewelry that I have in politics, horse racing, modern poetry, or women who need weird excitement. None.
Hold this necklace in your hand and tell me you're not John Roby the cat. John, tell me something. You're going to rob that villa we cased this afternoon, aren't you? Oh, I suppose rob is archaic. You'd say knock over?
Oh.
Don't worry, I'm very good at secrets.
Tell me, have you ever been on a psychiatrist's couch?
Don't change the subject. I know the perfect time to do it. Next week, the Sanfords are holding their annual gala. Everyone who counts will be there. I'll get you an invitation. It's an 18th century costume affair. There'll be thousands upon thousands of dollars worth of the world's most elegant jewelry. Some of the guests will be staying for the weekend. We'll get all the information and we'll do it together. What do you say?
My only comment would be highly censorable.
She sits down on a small sofa.
Give up, John. Admit who you are. Even in this light, I can tell where your eyes are looking.
He walks over and sits down on the other end while the fireworks explode in the night sky through the window behind them.
Look, John. Hold them. Diamonds. The only thing in the world you can't resist. Then tell me you don't know what I'm talking about.
She lifts his hand and kisses his fingers, then carefully pulls them to her and places the large diamond necklace she's wearing in his palm.
Never had a better offer in your whole life, one with everything.
I've never had a crazier one.
Just as long as you're satisfied.
As well as I do, this necklace is imitation.
Well, I'm not.
They lean towards each other and kiss as the fireworks burst in a blaze of color. When Roby lies her down on the sofa, sparks shower intensely in the night sky. Later that night, Francie lies asleep on the sofa, while Roby steps out onto the balcony. Then he's sitting in a chair by the window, watching, when she comes into the room.
Give them back to me.
What did you have in mind, Francie?
Give them back to me, Mother's jewels.
I don't have them.
He puts on the light, and she attacks him.
Oh, don't. Wait a minute. Oh. No.
Roby kicks the door shut.
When did it happen?
When I was asleep.
Well, let's look.
There's only one place to look, and that's obviously here.
Help yourself.
Did you see Francie? Did she tell you what happened?
Yes, she's downstairs searching my room.
Well, that doesn't make sense. She said she knew where my jewelry was.
Well, she was wrong. May I look into your bedroom?
If you think it'll do any good. But don't you think we ought to call the police and the hotel manager? You know, they always like to get in on these things.
Yes, but would you let me look around first, Mrs. Stevens?
I don't care. I'd be just as happy if you didn't find anything.
Why do you say that?
Oh, I'm a little tired of draping those things over me. It was exciting at first, but you know, now I think it's more exciting to have them stolen.
Yes, and of course, you can't lose financially as long as Houston is around to make out the check.
Well, I'd be crazy to take this attitude if I did. Why on earth did Francie suspect you, Mr. Burns? Simple woodcutter from Oregon.
I'm anything but that, Mrs. Stevens. My real name is John Roby. I used to be a jewel thief several years ago.
Well, what a wonderful surprise.
Somehow I can't get worked up over it. Where did you keep the stuff?
In the case over there. Oh. Watch out for fingerprints.
There won't be any. Did they get everything?
Everything. Francie must have known about you all along.
She guessed today. You must sleep soundly.
I do.
He came down through the air shaft.
If you're not Mr. Burns from Oregon, why do you call yourself that and not... What was the other name?
Roby, John Roby. Oh, Mrs. Stevens.
Oh, I know the whole story. You want to go straight, but the gang won't let you.
Well, in this case, the gang is the law.
Mother, don't talk to him. Don't touch anything. You're not going to cover up any clues.
No, there aren't any clues to cover up. He came down the air shaft, took the stones, and went away the same way.
You know how he got in here as well as I do.
Did you find anything in my room?
I certainly did.
Nothing of your mother's?
No, you gave those to your accomplice. But I did find that the clothes of Mr. Burns the American all had French labels in them. And I found this. A list of everyone on the Riviera with jewelry worth stealing. Listen to what it says about us. What good is that going to do you? You're already caught. I called the police from your room and told them who you are and what you did tonight.
Everything? Oh, the boys must have enjoyed that down at headquarters.
Mother, his name isn't Burns. He's a notorious jewel thief called the Cat.
And what's he doing here now, Lamb? If he already's got the junk.
Returning to the scene of this crime.
Since when is love a crime? His name is Roby, and for my money, he's a real man. Not one of those milksops you generally take up with.
Mother, after all.
After all, my foot. Why do you think we move so many times? Hmm? Your father was a swindler, dear, but a lovable one. You ask me, this one's a bigger operator on every level.
Thank you, madame.
Mother, this is why I've had to spend half my life traveling around the world after you. Keep men like this away from you.
Well, after this, let me run my own interference. Looks like the blockers are having all the fun.
Well, if she doesn't have any common sense, I do.
Oh, shut up. They were my baubles that were stolen. If I don't care, why should you? They're insured. Now, the big question is, where do we go from here?
To jail.
Francie walks through the apartment and answers the door. She leads the detectives back into the room, but Roby's gone, and Jesse's lying casually on the bed.
Where is he?
Who?
John Roby.
Never heard of him.
He's on the roof.
Mother, the book you're reading is upside down.
Roby, who can hear through the open window, stands up and makes his escape across the rooftop.
We may be in France, but I'm still an American, and a man is innocent until he's proved guilty. Proved!
That won't be hard.
What's bothering you is John Roby's the first man who wouldn't fall down and roll over for you.
Oh, Mother, he played us both for fools, and you know it.
I know you ought to be spanked with a hair brush and sent back to school. Public school where they could pound some sense into you during recess.
He's a low, worthless thief.
Just what did he steal from you? Oh, Mother! Sit down while I tell you something about life and John Roby. Sit down before I knock you down.
A meeting in Commissaire Lepic's office. The police visit the kitchen staff at Bertani's restaurant. They search Roby's house and question Danielle on the beach. On the end of the harbour wall.
So for 3 days you've been doing nothing but fishing.
Keep it down. Do you still believe I did the Stevens job?
Well, yes, until you sent for me. But if you had done it, you'd hardly risk my bringing the police with me.
Thank you.
As you've been safely in hiding for several days, why did you come out in the open?
I need your help.
Perhaps I need yours even more. You see, my superiors at the London office...
Oh, well, this time I might solve some of your problems. Possibly all of them.
That's too much to hope for.
For 3 nights, I've been watching one of the villas on your list.
Oh, which one?
The Silvers, that South American couple. Somebody else is watching it, too. I've seen him in the dark, but I haven't managed to get close enough to catch him and to find out who it is.
Has he seen you?
Probably. I want to set a foolproof trap for him tonight. To do that, I'm going to need the assistance of the police. Naturally, I can't approach them.
How do you know he'll be there tonight?
Somebody gave this to Germaine, my housekeeper.
Oh, but it's in French. What does it say?
Roughly, it says, Roby, stay away from the Silvers' villa tonight. It's my night to yell, not yours.
Who gave it to Germaine?
It was left in a shopping basket. Look, Houston, get back to town and convince Lepic to have the police at the villa soon after midnight.
You're actually going now?
Of course.
But, Roby, that note is obviously bait for a trap. Someone wants you to go to the Silvers tonight.
I know it.
Possibly to kill you.
Will you talk to Lepic?
All right, but... Look, if this cat doesn't show up, the police might get you, and the whole thing will turn out rather badly. Yeah, maybe I'd better go along tonight as your alibi.
Listen, I know you get your insurance rates at a discount, but why be foolhardy?
At night, a large villa by the sea, surrounded by tall, dark trees. A light in a window at the top of some steps goes out. In the grounds beneath the steps, a shadow emerges from the darkness and moves slowly across the gravel path, then retreats again. Some flowers in a tree move, as if someone's behind them. Then lower branches of a different one also sway gently. The garden in darkness, just the trees silhouetted against the night sky and the white of the house behind them. Looking down the steep cliff face to the rocks and sea below. In the garden again.
It's easy, Robbie!
Someone behind Robbie has their arm locked around his throat. He struggles to pull it away. In the darkness, the outline of one man raises a wrench and hits the other with it. Then a body falls over the cliff edge and down into the sea. The police, several detectives, and several men in uniform hurry down the steps from the house into the garden. They continue down the steps of the cliff face to the sea and shine a light into the face of the dead man.
Oh, c'est Foussard, le sommelier du restaurant Bertani.
Almost everybody in Philadelphia reads the bulletin.
Just a minute, Mother.
Francie buys a paper. Its front page reads, Le chat est mort.
What is it? What's all the excitement?
The cat burglar's dead.
John Robbie?
No, a man named Foussard. A wine steward in a restaurant.
Honey, you better start practicing your apologies. In two languages.
You're positive Foussard was the cat?
We have no reason to change the story I gave to the newspaper.
Well, that's hardly a direct answer, Commissioner.
I cannot give you another. Now, if you excuse me.
One more point, Mr. Lippick. This is a check for $280,000. That's nearly 92 million francs. Now, since you've caught and unfortunately killed the cat...
In our opinion, he killed himself, attempting to escape justice.
Well, either way, I've been instructed by my company to pay off the Stevens claim. Now, I'm disinclined to do this if recovery of the jewelry is imminent. Is it?
It will take time.
I'd say several centuries. Oh, I just came in to congratulate you on your capture, Commissaire. Well, all's well that ends well, huh? Yes, newspapers have their headlines. All the rich tourists can relax. And you, Lippick, got your publicity and possibly accommodation from the Paris office. Almost everyone got some good out of it. Oh, except, of course, Houston's company. But then they can well afford it, can't they, Houston?
Well, it has cut into their assets.
Poor Foussard. Never guessed it was him. Ordinary wine waiter. Family man. Wooden leg.
They look surprised.
Oh, didn't you know? Why, certainly, he lost it during the war. You know, that's remarkable, isn't it? A man with a wooden leg teaching himself to climb up walls and to run over the roof with the agility of a four-footed cat.
Is that true?
I believe he had a bad leg.
Yes, you showed such good taste in keeping it out of the newspapers. Well, I think it's only fitting that I drop into Foussard's funeral, pay my last respects. Oh, and at the same time, get a look at the real cat. It will certainly be there, purring.
You know who the real cat is?
In a phrase, I do.
Well, tell the commissioner who it is.
He wouldn't believe me.
Well, then try me.
You'd find it hard to believe. But when I catch the cat on a rooftop with a handful of stolen diamonds...
Monsieur Robbie, it's because I gave this story to the newspapers you're at liberty. But the day I catch you on a roof, I'll call the reporters again.
Vic, that's all I wanted to know. Good day. A biento.
A packed funeral in a cemetery. Robbie stands amongst the mourners, looking around at them searchingly. The congregation is made up largely of men in dark suits, including those from Bertani's kitchen. Danielle, dressed in black, is one of only a few women. The man from the beach is there, standing next to Bertani, and the two of them start to edge their way through the crowd. They pass behind Danielle, who watches them uncomfortably. Then Bertani stands next to Roby.
A most unhappy affair, eh, Roby?
Unhappy because it isn't me down there?
Poor Danielle. I have a great compassion for her.
I'll look out for her. What do you suppose happened to all the stuff he stole?
Ah, that's a mystery. The police have looked in every place.
Someday it'll turn up.
The boys owe you many thanks.
For what?
You know, for risking the prison to capture the cat.
Oh, that.
But you, have no reason to complain, eh?
Could you be a little more specific?
The American girl. What's her name?
Oh, Francie Stevens. That the one?
What luck. A beautiful woman with love for you reach beyond your dreams.
I dream pretty rich.
When are you going to America?
I didn't know I was.
You will make a great mistake if you don't marry her and return to your native country.
Tell you what, let's talk about it at Sanford Gala over the weekend. You know, between your catering duties.
You are not invited.
I will be.
What costume will you wear?
I'll figure out something to surprise you.
Good luck.
Nous enterrons mon père aujourd'hui et je vous prierai de ne pas confondre ce cimetière avec la chambre des députés.
Danielle directs her tirade at Roby.
Mais sans vous, mon père vivrait encore. Mais vous n'êtes qu'un ignoble assassin, cynique et sans pitié. Killer. It's because of you he's dead.
Oh, Danielle, mon petit, pas en public, vous avez tort.
Mais vous n'êtes qu'une bande de lâches, enfin. Et si personne n'ose dire ici, moi je le ferai. Get out. Get out of here, killer. Voleur. Murderer.
Roby slaps her face, then turns to go. But a group of men block his way. He forcefully pushes them apart and walks away through the cemetery. He comes out of the gate and sits down on a stone monument by the side of the road.
John!
Francie's parked nearby in her convertible. But when Roby sees her, he stands up and walks away.
John!
He stops and looks at her for a moment, then slowly goes over to her, his hands on his hips. Francie watches with a worried expression as he approaches.
Are you going to make it hard for me to apologize?
Not at all. I'm sure you're sorry.
You know I am. Your mother told me I had no idea the things you were up against. What are your plans now?
Now what?
That the cat burglar's dead.
Fusard isn't the cat.
But the newspapers.
The man had a wooden leg.
Wasn't he caught at a villa trying to rob it?
He wasn't trying to rob it. He was trying to kill me.
Why?
Because I was getting too close to the cat.
Well, then who killed him?
If I ever find that out, I'll let you know. Goodbye, Francie.
John, why bother?
You know, it's sort of a hobby of mine, the truth.
Let me do something to help you.
Oh, no thanks. Now, you've just made your apologies. Let's just go back to our mutual disregard of each other,
Mr. Roby, I was wrong about you, I think. You might possibly be wrong about me.
Well, now, that's another thing that I may never know. If you'll pardon me,
I won't pardon you.
She holds his arm.
I'm in love with you.
Roby stares at her.
Well, that's a ridiculous thing to say.
Is it?
No, to you, words are just playthings.
We're playthings.
I'll make you a sporting, exciting offer.
I don't know if I'm up to it now.
Give me an invitation to the Sanford Gala. I'll take you there.
It's costume, you know. You can't go without a costume.
What are you wearing?
Louis 15th. Mother and I got them in Paris.
I'll phone you in a day or two. Oh, you probably wonder why I want to go, huh?
I have an idea.
I thought you might like to see a real live burglar in action.
Would it be dangerous?
Not for tourists.
Francie watches him walk away. Nighttime on the roof of this Sanford villa. Small attic room windows protrude from the dark, sloping tiles. Below, in the courtyard, guests in fancy dress form two lines to greet and applaud the new arrivals. Everyone's dressed in colorful 18th century French costumes, the men wearing white wigs, long coats and breeches, an orchestra playing behind them. A woman in an extravagant white dress with a feather plume comes down the red carpeted steps to join the party, pausing to bow to the hosts at the top. The dress is ivory-colored satin, flared at the hips from a very narrow corseted waist. An intricate pattern in black flows all the way down the front, all set off by an elaborate diamond necklace. Another couple arrive and bow to the hosts as two men take photographs. A woman in a sky blue dress, her partner in white, walk down the steps hand in hand. She too wears a diamond necklace. Another couple with a pair of dogs arrive. Then a couple in regal Middle Eastern dress. Then a woman dressed as Little Bo Peep. Staff from Bertani's restaurant, dressed as French maids and servants, prepare the food and drinks in the garden. Bertani, dressed like the other guests, puts a comforting hand around Danielle, who's unpacking champagne, then joins the party as an older woman in a satin dress and white furs, with four gold-plated servants in tow, makes her grand entrance. Next, Jessie walks out in a dark navy blue gown, the neckline edged with silver and a blue plume of feathers atop her lightly tinted blue hair. Beside her, Francie wears a plain gold dress, tight around the bodice and flared at the hips. They bow to the hosts and are followed down the steps by a servant wearing black, blue and red robes and a full black face mask, carrying a large parasol over the ladies' heads.
Well, we're in. Any man without a lady on his arm can only be a policeman.
My nerves could stand a drink.
Your nerves and your mother.
Bertani inspects the buffet that's been laid out in the courtyard and tells the man from the beach to throw away a cigarette that he's smoking while pouring champagne. Lepic and Mercier, both dressed up, make their way over to the food and drinks.
Bonsoir, Monsieur Bertani.
Un peu de champagne, Monsieur le Commissaire. À moins que vous ne buviez pas pendant le service.
Je ne bois jamais en dehors du service.
Jesse, Francie, and Roby watch the three of them talking.
Hello. There they are. Police Commissioner Lepic and one of his men. Wigs, pantaloons, and flat feet. Come on.
Oui, merci.
Oh, my heart pills. Can't be champagne without my pills. It gives me heartburn.
Well, where do you think you left them, Mother?
Upstairs in our room. They're in my purse. Would you be a sweetie, John, and go and get them for me?
Of course. I'd be delighted.
Mother.
Well, all I said was...
Never mind what you said.
Lepic and Mercier watch carefully as Roby threads his way through the crowded courtyard towards the house. Lepic swigs his champagne, and they move amongst the guests, keeping their eye on Roby.
Mm-hmm.
While Lepic watches Roby, Mercier goes over to a couple of men in costume under the stone gazebo with its polished marble floor, where many of the guests have gathered. He sends one man one way and tells the other to go with him, while Lepic approaches the Sanfords.
Qu'est-ce que c'est?
On vit le chat ici.
Ici?
Oui, il vient de monter dans les champs.
Non? Il
ne craint rien. Je le surveille.
The hosts look worried by his words, but Lepic reassures them. Roby returns in his full costume and hands Jesse her pills.
Thank you, dear.
Francie whispers in his ear, and he nods.
Shall we dance?
He bows and gestures for her to lead the way. Jesse finishes her drink, then glances surreptitiously behind her and downs Francie's glass of champagne as well. She grimaces at the taste, then smiles at the barman.
Avez-vous bourbon?
Oui, madame.
The guests mingle in the courtyard, their costumes creating a rich, moving palette of color. Dark red, bronze, gold, mint green, white, orange, and blue. Lepic, in his long pink coat, watches as Roby and Francie dance under the gazebo with the other guests. Roby still has on his full black face mask, and the white plume of feathers atop his head stand out above the crowd. Mercier, wearing a long navy blue coat embroidered with gold, approaches Lepic and points out the sentries he's positioned around the courtyard. Later, some guests are sitting on the steps to the gazebo. Roby and Francie dance on. Later still, a few guests have passed out on the steps, while others flirt and kiss. Francie and Roby are still dancing. And later still, Roby and Francie are the only people left dancing. The other guests have gone. The food's been cleared away, and all that remain are the undercover policemen that watch them. Lepic and Mercier smile at each other smugly. Then the orchestra's conductor shakes his head wearily and stops the music. The musicians stand up and pack their instruments away. Francie and Roby stop dancing. Francie whispers in his ear, and they go down the steps of the gazebo, watched only by the anxious policeman. Francie almost glides across the courtyard in her dress, then up the red-carpeted steps on the opposite side to the house. Lepic strides across the courtyard to his men, and as others join them, and they all stand in a huddle, he sends two off to follow the couple. As the two policemen climb the steps and go inside, Mr. Sanford comes out of the house to see Lepic, who moves forward with his men to meet him. Inside, Francie and Roby walk arm in arm down an opulent marbled hallway to a door at the end. They open it, and Francie goes inside, but Roby pauses for a moment until the two officers that were sent to follow them catch up and witness them go in. One officer sends his colleague to the large windows at the end of another corridor. He opens them and steps onto the balcony to keep watch there. In the room where Jesse's passed out on a sofa, Roby removes his hat and mask. It's Hewson.
Well, I hope the London office appreciate what I've done for them. Oh, my feet are killing me.
There was quite a little actress tonight.
I thought you played her part rather well.
Art pills.
Frankly, I didn't believe this scheme of yours would work, Francie. But it has.
Francie looks anxiously out of the open window. Roby sitting on the rooftop in the darkness, leaning against a tall stone chimney, concealed by the shadow it casts over him. He looks around at the silent, empty tiles, green light reflecting off them in the darkness. his attention's drawn to the ground, where Bertani's men are loading up the catering van, and Bertani himself kindly ushers a woman in a maid's outfit, like the one Danielle was wearing, into a waiting car, then gets in himself. The police. On Lepic's orders, they take off their wigs and relax. On the roof, Roby appears frustrated. Then the lights go out in the house. Inside, in the half-light, a gloved hand picks jewelry up off a small table and drops it into a bag. On the roof, Roby leaves his hiding place. He turns suddenly, hearing something behind him, and looks across to the roof of another wing. But everything appears to be still. He lies down flat. A figure passes briefly from one shadow to another as it makes its way to the top of the roof and along it. Roby watches the person walk the length of it, then turn onto the roof he's lying on and start moving towards him. He ducks down out of the light as the figure in black draws nearer through the darkness. He stands and moves quietly up the roof, then along it, past a large square chimney that sits on the apex. He pauses in the join of two roofs and moves towards the top of the one he's on, then stops again, looks behind him, and suddenly runs onto the next roof. On the ground, the police, who are getting into their car, sprint back to the courtyard. Roby's now stalking the other figure along the roof. When they try and run, he cuts them off, grabs them, and pulls off their mask. It's Danielle.
I figured it was you the night your father died. He couldn't climb anything, and you always did his legwork for him, even during the war when you were a kid. Come now, Roby!
As the police ignite a large spotlight and shine it on them, Danielle makes a run for it, and it's Roby that's trapped in its glare. He quickly hides behind a chimney again.
We shall be forced to shoot!
One of the officers runs forward and pulls out his pistol. Roby looks around, then makes a run for it. He moves to another part of the roof and ducks down behind it as the spotlight goes out and darkness falls again. Hanging off a gutter, Danielle manages to haul herself back up. Below, Francie runs up to Lepic.
Put that gun down, he's not the cat.
And what does he do in that room?
Your job, that's what he's
Madame,
doing.
Madame, I can only believe what I see.
You shoot him and
I... Roby's just where I knew he'd be someday.
Roby spots Danielle on the far end of the roof. Glancing wearily down at the ground, he moves out of his hiding place and goes after her. Danielle hides in the shadows. Aware of Roby's approach, she looks for an escape and spots a spindly tree rising up towards the roof. She stands up and, with Roby close behind her, jumps onto the next lower roof. But she slips and rolls down it, right off the edge, grabbing onto the gutter as she falls. The crowd below watch as she dangles one-handed from it. Roby jumps down and grabs her wrist just as her own grip fails her.
Oh, pull me up!
She drops the jewels.
Don't shout, it makes me nervous. I might drop you.
Then drop me!
Whatever you say.
No!
All right, now, you've got a full house down there. Begin the performance.
What performance?
You know, the one in which you tell them what is what and who is really who.
But please don't.
I think I can hold you for about 30 seconds, no more.
I did it for my father.
Now, that's fine, but I already know it. We're telling them down there, remember?
I kill you when I get up there.
If you get up here, tell them.
I was working for my father. Now, please.
Your father is conveniently dead. Who else?
That's all.
Now I'm out of training. My fingers are beginning to open. Tell them who was behind it, who engineered the whole thing, who knew as much about me as I knew myself.
Little dernier
Tigano! Go on!
Bertani! Bertani's was behind.
We're telling them down there, remember?
Bertani's was behind it!
That's right.
Oh, no, please,
please, I saw. Roby pulls her up to safety. Daytime, and Roby's red and white car speeds along country roads, followed by the black police car, to his villa in the hills. Roby strides onto his balcony, soon followed by Francie in her gold dress.
Who brought you up here?
The police. We would have caught you, too, if my dress hadn't gotten caught all over the steering wheel and gear shift.
It was only 20 minutes ago I said goodbye.
As quickly as you could.
Didn't I thank you?
Politely.
Well, then.
Oh, John, you left in such a hurry, you almost ran.
I had work to do up here.
Were you afraid to admit that you just can't do everything by yourself? And that you needed the help of a good woman? And you just aren't the lone wolf you think you are.
All right. Without you, I couldn't have done it. I needed the help of a woman. I guess I'm not the lone wolf I thought I was, Francie.
Well, I just wanted to hear you say that. Thank you. Goodbye.
She offers her hand, and Roby takes it, but pulls her towards him into a kiss. They embrace, and Francie rests her head on his shoulder with a smile.
So this is where you live. Oh, Mother will love it up here.
He turns to look at her. The end.